I guess to begin with, how did you become a restaurant critic? Were you covering a regular beat and your editor said, hey, how'd you like to review restaurants or become a food writer?
No, I had no journalism experience whatsoever. I was actually working as a restaurant cook. After graduating from college, I lived abroad for a while and then decided to go to cooking school. And right around that time, I met my wife, who was taking off to Denver to finish her training out there. And when I got to Denver, it wasn't the most exciting cooking town in the late 80s, but it was a great city, and the alternative Newsweekly was looking for a freelance dining critic, and I just threw my name in the hat, and they picked it out.
Well, you've covered the Atlanta restaurant scene and various aspects of it for...
Oh, my God. Yeah, Paleolithic era. Yeah.
For quite a while.
18 years.
Wow. The most significant change you've noticed on that scene in the last several years?
There's really been kind of a generational shift, and I think that today's most interesting restaurateurs are actually from a different generation, and they have different interests in what they want when they eat out. They want a place that's comfortable and is warm and inviting and creates a sense of community, but that also serves excellent destination-worthy food. And that's really changed. You know, they want the fine dining without the trappings.
Do you think it's because that generation, and I'm going to generalize here.
Okay, sure. Yes.
Was raised with a lot more choices than, say, the generations previous to that. They had more choices in entertainment and clothing and food. And therefore, well, they expect it. They're more discriminating, I guess.
For sure. I mean, I think that, for instance, when I first moved here in 1997, and a couple years later, I wrote a little column about taking my then 8-year-old daughter out for her birthday party at a Korean barbecue because that's what she loved. And I thought it was so funny that, you know, none of the other parents said, you know, all the other parents said, my kids would never eat this stuff. You know, it's going to be wasted. And of course, all the kids loved it. But that's a generation of kids that's grown up going to Korean barbecue. And so they know those flavors. They've just had so much more choice as kids in what they eat and what they like. And they're much more open. So, you know, the food's food is so much better now than it was then.
So what's lacking in Atlanta? Maybe you can complete this sentence for me. What this town needs is a good...
What this town needs... Let me think about that for a second. It's a good question.
Well, I have an answer myself.
What's yours? Yeah, you tell
and
me.
Again, I'm just
trying to think how to phrase it, but yeah.
I think what this town needs is a good German restaurant.
Yes, there's very little Middle European food in this town. There's a lot of, you know, I was thinking about that. There are a lot of, you know, pockets in ethnicity in this town. There's one Portuguese restaurant that isn't very good, and there are a few Spanish restaurants now, but for a long time there weren't any. There's absolutely nothing in terms of German or Czech or Hungarian or Russian anymore. When I first came, there were a few Russian restaurants, but they're really, for all intents and purposes, they don't exist anymore. So, sure, a lot of that would be great. I was also thinking in the other way, what this town needs is another kind of, it needs a few more neighborhood bistros that just really perform above and beyond. The small neighborhood restaurant that could, I think, is always makes a food scene so exciting. I think we certainly have some great ones like Cakes and Ale in Decatur, but I think more restaurants like that would really just ramp things up here.
From a business angle, do restaurants have a target demographic when they design their interior and their menu? And
noise level?
I think that when it comes to marketing, I mean, you've got to know the audience you're going for.
Right.
And for example, some restaurants that have been in business for a long time, you know, the Colonnade, to use an extreme example, mm-hmm. it's not going to have the clientele that Cakes and Ale has.
Right, exactly.
So I guess the question I have is that if I'm going to open a restaurant in Atlanta, which is a tremendous investment and a lot of risk too, I need to do my research on where my clientele is and how much money they can generate.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a whole thing going on now with Buckhead Resurgence. You know, now that Buckhead Atlanta is up and running and has added 12 or 13 new restaurants and more are being built around there, you're seeing that kind of moneyed well-dressed Buckhead crowd is out in force again in a way they haven't been since before the recession. The other night I had a terrific meal at Umi, the sushi restaurant that's in, is it One Buckhead Plaza, mm-hmm. you know, right there at West Paces and Peachtree. And I mean, the crowd there is so glamorous that it's funny. I mean, I definitely was just kind of the slob sitting in the corner eating sushi. It was great.
Is it true that a good or a bad review can really make or break a restaurant?
I've never thought that. Even, you know, back in the days when the daily newspaper and the weekly newspaper reviews were the only games in town. I mean, I think restaurants make or break themselves. And I think that a good review sometimes can help people discover it earlier. I like it when a restaurant is excellent and people don't know about it. And then if I help spread the word, it'll help them accelerate their word of mouth. I think that's great. A bad review, I think, is so often, if a critic writes a bad review, the critic isn't the only one who's feeling that. And I think word of mouth has a much more deleterious effect on a restaurant's fortunes than a bad review.
Do you avoid publishing a review of a place that is so lacking that you just think, you know what?
They're gonna die anyhow.
What's the point? I shouldn't even mention it.
Is the place gonna croak? One time, if it's a small restaurant, I remember, God, I can't remember the name of it, but there was a Asada, I think. It was a Mexican restaurant where Fox Brothers Barbecue is. And I went three times, and they didn't have any business. The food wasn't very good. And the owner wrote to me and asked about a review. And I said, honestly, I just don't want to write the review. I don't, it can only hurt you. And it seems like you're having a hard enough time. And he didn't take that very well. And it was an early learning lesson for me. It made me realize I shouldn't have told them that. I just should have said, we've been and, you know, I'm considering it, but then explain my feelings. I feel if I'm going to write the review of a restaurant, it's a restaurant that people are curious about. And so obviously I won't go out of my way to find a tiny restaurant in Beaufort Highway and then say it's terrible. But I can certainly, you know, if it's a big splashy restaurant in Buckhead, Atlanta, and people want to know about it, then, yeah, I'll go three times and I'll be thorough. But, yeah, nothing stops it.
Given that many people are passionate about food, have you ever been threatened for something you've written?
Actually, I was a long time ago. Back when I was working in Denver, I believe there was a restaurant where each dish – I mean, I was also, you know, like cocky and, you know, 29 at the time. But I think, you know, each dish was worse than the previous one. And I think I finally wound up to this point where I said, and the golden stomach pump goes too. And I got such a threatening letter from that owner. And I heard afterwards that he was definitely pounding his fist into his hand. So,
I would imagine that savvy restaurateurs in this town know what you look like, especially now that your caricature is published in the AJC.
I know. Seriously.
How do you conceal your identity, or do you?
There's always that, you know, the rubber, foam rubber Mrs. Doubtfire costume that I've just worn to the quick. No, I really don't anymore. I mean, the whole thing of restaurant critics with concealed identities is something that is changing very rapidly because of cell phone technology. And so there's been a big spate of restaurant critics around the country outing themselves quite spectacularly. Adam Platt, who's the restaurant critic for New York Magazine, was on the cover of the magazine. Leslie Brenner at the Dallas Morning News made quite a splash when she outed herself there. And so it just happens. There are things you can do to compensate, but...
So you've crafted thousands of reviews, I imagine, over the years?
Yeah.
How many different ways can you describe a great steak?
Dang, I think I've described all of them, you know. The problem is you've got to come up with, like, so you just don't keep saying steak all the time. So you start referring to it as hunk of cow or Bessie or, you know, something else. But, it's what you do is you just get away from adjective churn. You just have got to get yourself back into basic good writing, you know, strong nouns, active verbs, and just don't pile on the adjectives and then you'll be fine.
I try not to miss your column, and there was one that you wrote a few years ago that has stuck in my mind ever since mm-hmm. I read it. It was about a place that was described or considered by many to be one of the best, if not the best, restaurants in the world. It was a place in Denmark, I believe.
Right, yeah.
And first of all, I don't think you could say, well, this is the best restaurant in the world. That's ridiculous in my mind. But you ate there.
Mm-hmm.
And was it among the best?
It was certainly among the most delightful experiences I've personally had. I shy away from best even when I have to compile dining guides for the paper. I always like to draw a distinction between favorite and best because I think that idea of anointing some restaurant the best is kind of bogus. And I was actually the group that called that restaurant the best, San Pellegrino 50 Best Restaurants by Restaurant Magazine in London. And they have a, you know, restaurant critics from around the world on their board. And they asked me to join it. And I said no because I just felt that I didn't have the experience to compare. But all that aside, it was terrific. It was fun. It was low key. The food was so interesting. There was a, you know, certainly a lot being written about it then, but it just lived up to everything. It was just two, three hours of just sort of delight. So that's what you want, you know? It didn't get boring at all. I mean, I've been to other very involved multi-course meals that are certainly appealing, but, you know, after a while, I'm kind of, you know, ripping up my napkin and folding it into little, you know, pieces and things like that.
You told me when we spoke several years ago that you wanted to open a restaurant someday. Has that day arrived, John?
I don't know. I mean, it's always in the back of my mind. I've got some writing projects I'm going to be working on when I finish my job at the AJC. And I've also have a new appointment as the chairman of the James Beard Award Journalism Committee. So I'm going to be spending some time getting to know that work and helping the foundation award wonderful writers, which is exciting for me. You know, I've always had this fantasy of a great little falafel stand where, you know, once when I was in Israel, I went to this amazing falafel stand where they were cooking the pita breads in beehive ovens right behind the line. It was like Chipotle, but with just fresh bread being peeled off these ovens. And I've always had a little fantasy. Maybe I could do that one day.
John Kessler is the food writer and dining critic for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for just a little while longer. John, we're going to miss you. It's good to see you again.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.